Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com.
Welcome back to the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Ben Tully. It's been a long time, everybody. I have been on vacation for way too long.
Far too long.
Yeah, the internet was a thing that I didn't even know existed while I was away. It was a very, very dull existence.
Now, you were out training in the swamps of Dagobah, right?
Right. I mean, not for this game, obviously, because otherwise I would have been at Gen Con, but I was in the swamps. They don't have good Wi-Fi in the swamps of Dagobah.
Didn't seem like it.
Yeah, no, it was rough. But, as you can hear, joining me, as always, we have Neil Kimball. And not just Neil, because this is a Gen Con special rundown.
That's right, Ben.
With us, the one, the only, Tyler Stratton.
Hello. Thanks for having me back, guys.
Yeah.
Welcome.
So, guys, this is the Tuesday after Gen Con has concluded. Mm-hmm. So the Star Wars finals and the final cut was 4 days ago. So, you know, it's been a while since we've had...
And Tyler and I just woke up.
Yeah.
Sleeping off Gen Con.
I've been up for like 9 hours. It was like one of those days where I was like, I'm just going to get up and keep going. Yeah.
I'm still getting over all the con food, all the burgers and fries, needing nothing else for 4 days straight and sleeping for 4 hours at a night. Oh, it's great. I feel super healthy, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Chicago walking around a lot, so I felt really good this weekend.
Rub it in.
Yeah. For this episode, what we want to do is cover both of yours opinions for those of us of the Smuggler's Den who went to Gen Con, both leading up to the event, during the event, and then kind of a posthumous look at what happened at the event.
Sounds good.
It sounds good to you guys. So,
dun, dun, dun. It's a dun, lot. Dun, dun. Gen Con 2014. Cover it, we will.
Yes. So it's a lot to cover, but you know, hopefully everybody finds this a little interesting out there in Radio Land.
We'll try and keep it short and sweet.
Yeah, well, or long and winded, whatever happens. Let's kick it. Let's get started. So these questions are unless I, you know, obviously target you and say, Neil, answer this damn question.
No.
Listen, I have a torture slab thing here, like Vader used on Han and Empire, so don't ever say no to me again.
It's called carbonite, by the way.
No. The one that he uses and he doesn't even ask any questions.
Oh, that one. Oh, yeah. Okay, never mind. I don't know what that one's called. Torture slab sounds right. All right. Point back.
If it isn't what it is, it should be. Lucas, call me.
Yeah.
So, but this is just a general question to the two of you, so feel free to answer. Talk over each other, make it really hard for our listeners to understand. Do you guys want to talk a little bit about what you did in terms of your planning?
Yeah, sure.
And things like that?
I was really busy. I was working a lot. I didn't even know I was going to go to Gen Con until like 2.5 weeks before, I think, maybe 3. So I was trying to make it up to Game Empire every week to test, and I would even come after work and not get there until like 7:30 to play. But mostly I was going with the mentality of, oh, look, I played in 2 regionals, and I used almost the same decks both times. You know, they're 1 pod different each both times, and I was really happy with their performance. I knew them really well. So I kind of went into my testing mentality of not like, let me find a brand new deck. I didn't want to reinvent the wheel. I just wanted to see if I needed to tweak my regional deck, basically, because I won both regionals for those who missed previous podcasts. So I was very happy with the performance of that. So I went in just trying to tweak those, and I didn't get enough chance to test against other people who were testing really hardcore for Gen Con, because it's basically just me and Neil.
Right.
And as Neil has mentioned, he was playing some wonkier decks at first, so I never even saw some of the main builds of the decks that I played against, which I think ended up really hurting me, but I just didn't have the time.
I think that you're definitely right that there weren't many people very seriously testing really ultra-competitive decks at Game Empire at that time.
Yeah.
Which I normally like. I think that we have a good
group
of players who play fun decks that are competitive, but maybe not, you know, the very, very height of competitiveness. So we still have fun. But in this case for Gen Con, it, I think, didn't really allow us to see quite how incredibly powerful certain deck types were.
Yeah.
With more preparation and a different mindset, I may have come up with and chosen different decks.
All right, all right. So let's move on a little bit. So with the FAQ tournament rules, not only did they solidify which force packs were going to be part of the Gen Con experience, they also introduced some new tournament rules.
They sure did, Ben.
Sure did.
Oh, yeah.
They got rid of the tiebreaker point.
Which was a great call, in my opinion.
I love it. And they introduced a new way to work towards the winner after the cut. And so, you know, we could talk a little bit of exactly how this plays out actually at Gen Con in a minute. But so give me the short version of how this, does this go into your planning for the event? Does this go into how you're going to design your decks? Does any of that factor into what you're planning on doing?
Yeah, definitely. I think that to me, it allowed more of a freedom with the individual deck design, because you're just focusing on winning with each deck.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about the tiebreaker, which, after having played it, I have mixed feelings about, but at least in going into it, designing a deck, that's one of the reasons I felt comfortable going with a Navy deck. Because under these new rules, even though you don't have the tiebreaker to sort of help Navy, I think that you also don't have the tiebreaker to hurt Navy, and that you can be okay with giving up one or two objectives to the light side as long as you're still getting in that last attack to blow up all of their objectives, pump the dial, and win.
Yeah, I completely agree that it simplifies deck building. It frees up deck building, if anything, that you can win in any style now as long as you're still winning, and that is the point. And that made it a lot better. I mean, before the cut, I think all the games were better in terms of the give and take, and especially with the light side slowing down the dial a lot. There's more time. You can be more patient with everything on both sides of the dial, because it's not such a rush. Like, oh, I have to destroy these objectives right now. I mean, obviously with light side, you're always wanting to destroy the objectives, but with the changing the mentality on the dark side changed a lot of things in that regard. And I thought it was great.
So now, let's say it's Wednesday, you're traveling to Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, what decks are you intending to play? I imagine both of you aren't the type of people who made radical last-minute changes, but what were you planning on playing as you got off the plane? Did anything change as you played some practice games? You know, it sounds like both of you, you know, have been hinting towards the fact that you maybe were caught unawares of what the current meta looked like. So what was your interpretation of the current meta before you sat down to play?
I don't know. I don't even really know. I knew that there was going to be Gamor Jedis. I mean, I knew there was going to be a fair amount of that. I knew Gamor was going to make the Gamor run was going to make a much larger appearance here than at the second regional, because at the second regional, it had just come out in Vegas. So I was expecting that, but I just wasn't expecting it as much. I thought I was going to see a little bit more variety of the light sides. I thought I was going to see way more scum. And then the dark side the dark side was about where I expected it to be, but I didn't make any real changes. The only change I made in both of my decks from Vegas regional to Gen Con is I took out one Trust Me and put in the new Wookiee Pod, which I wanted to make some kind of change to like try something different. And I really liked Lowric because he added a lot of punch to the Wookiees. But in hindsight, I really regret that decision. So I went back and forth about it a lot. I know Neil knows that I like the pods are very similar and they have a lot of things in common and they both provide a lot of benefits. But Trust Me can just control the board more. And so I was on the fence right up until when I wrote down on my sheet, my deck list on whether or not to put that in. But I decided I'd do something different and, you know, you'll go with that choice. If you regret it, so what?
So do you want to just give us a rundown of what your two decks were?
So my light side was the new Wookiee Pod, whatever it's called, Trust Me. two Dash, two Han, two Chewie, two Falcon.
Okay.
And then my dark side was two Vader, two Palpatine, two Mara, one vast resources or endless reserves, one Devastator, one the Plan of the Prophetess, and one Council of the Sith.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. Neil, your thoughts, and then finish it up with your deck.
I think that I knew what to expect from the composition of the meta, and it was more or less what I expected. A lot of Jedi Gamor with then also decent amount of Mono Smuggler and Dark Side, just mostly Sith, variations on Sith, a lot of scum with Sith, just tons of Sith. So the composition was kind of what I expected. It was just all of those decks were a lot stronger than I expected. And my decks didn't do as well in the matchups as they had in testing. And so I was at peace with my deck choices. I think that's the best way to put it.
You thought based on what you were expecting and what you had tested against, even in the limited fashion that we get to when we only have a couple people, you know, around in the meta for whatever reason, you were pretty comfortable with the idea that your decks were going to tackle the new or the current meta pretty well. And you were a little shocked when they didn't.
Yeah, I thought that they would be a little stronger than they were against the current meta. I knew that there were weaknesses. I knew that they were not the standard decks, but I was thinking and hoping that perhaps the element of surprise or something unusual might give me more of an advantage than it did.
Sure.
And so I had ended up deciding to run for light side a speeder deck with Gamor Run. So it was two of the Hoth Gambit, two of Hoth Operations, two of Attack Pattern Delta, two the Gamor Run, one prep for battle and one prep for evac. And on the dark side, I was doing a mono navy trooper deck.
Ooh.
That was two the Dark Trooper Project, two reinforcements, two the General's Imperative, one Imperial Command, one the Ultimate Power, one Unstoppable Advance, and one the General's Assault, or the Admiral's Assault, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of Hoth for both of your decks.
Yeah, eight Hoth on the light side. Only five, I think, on the dark side.
Only five or 50%.
Yeah.
Oh. Actually, it's only four on the dark side. Yeah.
All right. So there are your decks, everybody. Those are the decks. Write them down. Memorize them. There'll be quizzes on them later. All right. So you've arrived. Wednesday. You've slept terribly. Mm-hmm. It's Thursday morning. It's the day of the event. You've written down these final deck lists. Tyler making last minute changes up until the starting gun.
Debating.
So, you know, I've been trying. I was away this weekend at a wedding. So I only got small messages, updates from you guys on Facebook and after the event. I don't even know, and maybe some of our listeners don't even know, how FFG was structuring this event. I remember it being a two-day event, but that was before the new tournament rules came out. So explain to us what FFG tells you, what the event is going to look like, how many people are there, if you remember.
I think, Neil, what was there, like 96 people?
I heard it was wavering around the mid to high 90s, maybe close to breaking 100.
Yeah, somewhere in there. But so they announce against their own guidelines.
Of course.
That it's going to be seven rounds, not six. They're going to be 65-minute rounds. And I think after round four, there's going to be an hour break for lunch.
Okay.
So doing the math alone, like registration was at 10. They made these announcements at 11. We started first pairings at like 11:20. Okay. So doing the math from there, we're like, okay, well, it's 11:20. And just if there's a minimum amount of breaks and downtime, we're done at 8:30. And so we're like PM. And then we're like, no, that's way too early. So Neil and I deduced that the over under was going to be 10 PM.
Okay.
For whether or not it was going to end, which is leaps and bounds ahead of last year, mind you. Last year, they did not have their game together, so to speak. And they started late and it went super long and they got finished at like 2 a.m. or something like that.
Sure.
So we knew that wasn't going to happen at least. They seemed to be more organized.
And they had moved the cut to a separate day, which I don't think they did last year.
Oh, maybe that's why. Okay.
Right. They hadn't done that last year. All right. So we've got the setup. We've got 7 rounds coming at you. No tiebreaker point. Cut to a top 16. So walk us through your experience.
Well, we did the math and we were thinking that you needed it was 14 games basically.
Yeah.
Because it's 7 rounds. You're playing both sides. So it's 14 games. So we were thinking that you could only lose 3 times and make top 16. Total through it all.
So and you're thinking 33 points would get you in.
I think that was a guaranteed you get in.
Well, we thought that was kind of around maybe where the bubble would be.
Okay.
Yo, yeah.
And so this is just the two of you discussing? This is...
Yeah, sometimes... there wasn't a giant group discussion, but that's kind of where I did the math, and I had one or two discussions with a couple other guys that were there. I can't even remember who at this point. But that's what we were thinking. I was like, okay, I got to win 3 games. Or I can only lose 3 games was my target thing, which is, out of 14, that's a lot.
Sure.
To win. But so I had a bye to start the first round. So we just wait. So I hang out and wait for pairings or whatever. I grab some food. And then we get pairings for the second round. And I didn't take notes or anything like that. So I completely forget the names of most of my opponents.
Just wing it. But, tell us, what types of decks you saw.
But it was straightforward pretty much what we were talking about before. The deck that I saw a ton was... this or very, very close to this. It was 2 Lukes, 2 Yodas, 2 Gamor Runs, then some combination of 2 to 3 either Leias and or C-3PO's, the protector pod.
Mm-hmm.
Some mix in there. And then some people would play with Obi-Wan and some people would play with Kyle. I don't know the exact numbers of those, but I saw I didn't always see Kyle. I didn't always see Obi-Wan, but I always saw C-3PO and Leia. And this is exactly what every game looked like. At the beginning of the game, they would flip over their objectives and they would have Gamor Run and or May the Force Be With You. They always had at least one of those, basically. And then turn one, they would play Yoda, You Seek Yoda, push the dial up one, and play Yoda out of their deck. Then they'd play some small other 2-cost unit, either C-3PO or a Hired Hands. They'd attack with the Hired Hands, forcing me to focus somebody down. And then they would attack with Yoda. They'd focus somebody down, deal some damage, then commit him to the Force, readying him, locking down the Force for basically the entire rest of the game. Because they have Yoda out with 5 icons plus Gamor Run. Now, I sound a little cynical about this because it happened to me 6 times in a row.
Sure.
I'm literally Yoda first turn 6 times in a row. When it didn't happen in the finals, I was really shocked. So it's really frustrating, especially when they can commit him and ready him and take everything back. So I would manage to win full sweeps my first 2 matches. So rounds 2 and 3. So I was feeling really good going into round 3. And then I basically stopped drawing really well on the dark side. And I started getting really frustrated that I was getting these really tough draws. I would have draws that had no resource, or I had lots of vast resources in my hand and 2-cost units, things that I don't need vast resources for.
Sure.
So I was very frustrated rounds 4 and 5 because I lost both of those games.
As the dark side,
yeah. And I had to have a little meeting with myself and be like, okay, well, you're not actually drawing that poorly. You're not whiffing and drawing no units at all. Although that had happened a little bit. But what was really happening was because the light side could take the Force on turn 1 often because of Gamor Run, and or they would take it immediately on turn, on their turn 1, the end of their turn 1 with Yoda and whoever else, the pressure was put on dark side so strong that if I did not draw a main in turn 1 or turn 2, the game's over. So I had to draw a Mara and a Force Choke, and then turn 2 play a Vader or a Palpatine. And if those things didn't happen, I lost every game that those two things didn't happen. Except for maybe one miracle where the other guy drew a whiff hand where he played a 1 Hired Hands as his entire turn. So that was, it was really, really frustrating. It was actually probably the most stressful tournament I've played in Star Wars because so many games were I don't feel like it's my opponent is drawing super crazy well, or they're playing super crazy well, or I'm playing super bad. I just feel like I'm not drawing super well, and if I don't draw super well, I don't win, because I didn't tailor my deck specifically to beat that light side deck. Not to say that my opponents weren't really good, because they were. They were really, really good. But all things being equal, that's how it felt. My light side did great. It didn't. It lost some. If I, you know, drew poorly, that happened. Luckily, on turns that happened, I was able to pull a win out on my dark side. So I think after I swept all those rounds, I think I got swept the next round and then split everything else after that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if the math works out on that right. But so when I got swept, I was like super disappointed. Now, I got swept by the national champion, which what it turned out to be. So I feel less bad about that now. But I ended up with the round with 27 points, which was 5 losses. And that was a lot lower than what I thought I needed. And so I was real nervous. But everybody else, like everyone had been splitting all day. Matt Coles told me in the finals that his light side went 9-0 the whole day. And I heard that from many other people, that many people, especially people in the top 8 tables or so, their light sides were undefeated or only 1 loss. So you'd be upset with a split, and then you'd ask the like 5 tables ahead of you, how are you doing? And everyone's like, oh, split, split, split. Like nobody was sweeping.
So everybody's light sides were over the top.
Yeah. And a couple times when someone's light side did lose, the same would happen to the other person. They'd be like, actually, both of our dark sides won. And that was, the whole table would go, ooh, because there were so much splits. I must have heard 5 people say I've never split so much in my life.
Hmm.
I knew I had a strong strength of the schedule because I started at a higher table due to my bye, and then I swept the first couple of rounds. So I was feeling very good about my strength of schedule. I stayed at the top 8 tables all day. I thought I would end up coming down to a tiebreaker, but I felt pretty good about that going into top 16. So that's my experience before the cut. Neil?
I had a slightly different experience. I certainly had the same experience with splitting a ton.
Yeah.
In fact, I ended up splitting basically the entire day. Of the 14 games, I won 7 of them, lost 7 of them. And it was a little frustrating, and that's why we can talk about this more later, but I'm emotionally, the new tournament rules feel a lot tougher, because when you lose, there's no recourse for it. There's no, well, at least I got the tiebreaker. Well, at least I didn't lose as badly. It's just, nope, you lost, which is good and bad. And I want to say that even though I split a lot, there were so many close games.
Yeah, I remember you saying that.
From what I heard from a lot of people, it seemed like there were quite a few close games just in general in the tournament, maybe more so than in the past. I certainly felt that way.
I would agree, yeah.
Which is a good sign, I think, for the game, that even though there are some very high-powered decks, it still a lot of times comes down to, you know, one edge battle or one way that the draw fell that really kind of decides the game, rather than one side being dominant. And so I split my first 4 rounds, which, when that happens, even if I make up, you know, the rest of the wins, my strength of schedule is in the tank, because I've been playing...
You have to do really well, yeah.
Yeah, pretty mediocre, not mediocre players, but players with mediocre scores on the day. And so then in my 5th round, I swept my opponent. In my 6th round, I lost both games to Scott Egan. Both were really, really incredible matches, but his dark side pulled out one of the, I don't know if I want to say most beautiful wins in Star Wars that I've seen, but it was very impressive to see his deck work like that. And then my last round, I split again. And so on the day, my light side was 4 wins, 3 losses, and my dark side was 3 wins, 4 losses. So I essentially split both of my sides also, which is a little different than a lot of the field, I guess, was experiencing with the powerful light sides. But it was what it was, and I was certainly disappointed that I didn't do better, but it's something that I guess I need to figure out whether I want to do well and be a competitive player, or if I want to keep playing these maybe less powerful decks that I like more.
Yeah.
Because I really felt afterwards that I was doing myself a competitive disservice by playing these not Jedi Gamor, not Sith decks that, and it was a conscious choice, so it's fine. But in the future, for Worlds and for other big tournaments, I'm going to have to really think about how much I want to win versus how much I want to just play a cool deck.
Yeah, you had mentioned that to me, Neil, near the end, that we sort of said it kind of feels like selling out a little. It just depends on what your focus is, that if you want to go with something that's creative and your own ideas or your own play style versus something else. Somebody asked me afterwards, they're on the next day or whatever, they're like, how could you not know that this Jedi deck was a thing? Like, don't you have the internet where you live? And I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. I just didn't feel like I didn't want to go on and just be like, oh, this is the deck to play. I'm going to play it. It felt better to be playing the things that I made all the choices for.
Well, I mean, I feel like there's a huge risk, if we're going to talk about that for a second.
Sure.
There is an inherent risk to everybody being like, this is the deck to play, right?
Yeah.
Because that stagnates ideas and really allows somebody like Neil to, you know, or a Neil-like person to come along and be like, this is the deck that breaks that deck.
Yeah.
Right. And so if they, you know, barring being paired against, not being paired against it early, which I think can happen. And I've seen that happen. People being like, this is the top deck. People being like, I'm going to make the anti-top deck and then never getting to play because they get paired against something else in the first round and then they lose. And then they always are on the lower levels where people aren't playing the ultra competitive deck. Barring that happening, if you sit down on day one of a tournament like this with the deck breaking deck,
yeah.
You know, don't those people now have, are they at an inherent disadvantage because they're only thinking about it being the strongest?
Well, it's tough because the cards have to exist to be able to break that sort of deck.
Which I don't really think they do now, but I would say that John Herr, the guy who took the championship, I believe, I felt like his dark side deck was pretty well prepared for it, that he had splashed in the appropriate scum to get the card draw and the extra tactics icons needed to really lock down a light side.
So Neil, you ended up 7-7. That gives you 21 points. Do you remember what place you finished?
I believe it was 45th.
All right, 45th place out of 96 or so top 50%.
Yeah, and what's interesting is that, I mean, I had two more losses on the day than Tyler, which out of 14 games doesn't sound like that much, but it's, you know, a difference of 30 ranks.
Sure.
Yeah.
A lot of space covered in those two losses.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So Tyler,
mm-hmm.
you had 27 points.
Yep.
And you made the cut.
Yeah.
Were there tiebreakers involved in that?
There were 9 people who had a score of 27.
Okay.
So that was a really big thing. I think the tie was a much bigger deal. The tiebreaker was a much bigger deal at a tournament structure like this than at other tournaments, because there are less 1 points here and there chances. The only way you could get a 1 point is by going to time rather than, you know, splitting. So yeah, I ended up with 27 points with a strength of schedule of 185. And Scott had the same strength of schedule, so we had the same. And then everyone else was for between 174 and 127. So it sort of ranged all over the place. But top 16 as a whole all had pretty high strength of schedules, go figure. So it was the second or third, I think it's the third highest strength of schedule.
Yours was.
Mine was, yeah. There was I got it in front of me. There's a 191 and a 195 also in the top 16. But they weren't 27s. They were like higher ranks.
Sure. Okay, so let me ask this question. I have a bunch of questions all lined up here that I would love to ask before we even discuss that. Do you feel... Mm-hmm. Neil, you can answer this, but Tyler seems to have maybe a more better perspective on this, that the tie-breaking system that they used for this event made sense, right? It's just opponent strength and schedule, right?
Yeah.
So do you think it effectively chose, you know, having 9 people who were sharing the same score? Do you think it picked the right two people? Obviously, you think that you got deserved it, but like, do you think that it, overall it did what it was supposed to do?
Right. I do like it, and I do feel like it rewards the people. Like, ultimately, you have to win to get in, right?
Right.
But the difference is that you have to win early to get in.
Yeah.
Like, let's say being told, oh, Magic Genie comes and tells you, you're going to win this many games, and you can win them in whatever order you want. If you don't win your first game, it instantly becomes immediately harder to win at that point. It's via strength of schedule. Because you get paired with opponents with less scores, which are they're more likely to go on and, you know, and if you beat them as well, now they have even lower scores because they've lost twice.
Yeah.
And it's a snowball effect. So if you lose your first game and then win your games after that, you're sort of pared down and behind the curve the whole time. So that's the thing that's a little bothersome. Like, some really good players are below the cut line that, like, totally deserve top 16. But I bet that they lost in their first or second round when I swept, and that put me in a higher bracket, if you will, of strength of schedule.
Sure.
That being said, I also won a regional, so I got the super bye, which makes a really big difference. And a lot of these people on this list, like, I think Scott won a regional as well, and he has the same score as me. That gave us a lot of points. It started us in a higher bracket, so we're already playing against opponents who have won and continuing on from there. So
plus it gives you a full strength of schedule.
Yeah, exactly. Which was, you know, 36 points.
Right, I was gonna say, that's a lot. That is a huge number of points.
Huge is really big deal, yeah. But
otherwise you would have been down there with below
the
170. Like, if the next person behind you, who knows if they had a super buy too.
I don't think they did. I think Chris did not.
So
he was.
So he could have an argument being like, on the day,
yeah,
I actually played better, but Tyler's regional win.
And I, saying this, having won regionals, you know, I can understand if someone's like, oh, that's really biased, but I feel like if someone wins a regional, they should be rewarded for having played. I mean, that's more the, stuff, that's you know,
the,
like
the whole scheme of it. If you are good enough that you can win a regional and then come to nationals and still do well, like that's the benefit that you get from winning that regional.
Yeah. And that, like, it paid off in the strength of schedule here. So I have mixed feelings about it. I don't have a better option, but that's walking away from it. I was like, this feels really weird that I'm tied with 9 other people and only 3 of us make it in to top 16. But 2 out of the 3 of us played much harder opponents and also won regionals. Like, our scores really do reflect that it's different. And I know that that wasn't a biased thing because I played in the Conquest tournament on Saturday, and I had the opposite happen. I lost my first 2 games, and then I won the next 4 games, and I ended up with a tie for strength of schedule for top 16 and didn't make it because my strength of schedule was really low. And even then, I still felt the same way. I was like, yeah, I don't deserve to be in top 16 when these other people played all harder opponents, because I played a lot of people who didn't know what they were doing or they were new to the game. And, like, it was a little easier to win compared to them versus if somebody with more experience had been playing. Because it was a new game and all that jazz.
Sure.
Anyways, so let's
pause this talk here because we still got to go forward.
Yeah.
Always moving forward.
Great.
So you got an entire night off to ponder what's going to happen the next day. And with the new double elimination setup, somebody, maybe you, maybe somebody else, essentially has to play their dark side deck against what seems to be a very dominant light side meta in the first round. Half of the people get to do that. Are you thinking about that going into the next morning?
Yeah,
overnight?
Totally.
You know, how is everybody else who you're talking to in the top cut? How are they feeling about that? Knowing so many people got to the top 16 with the weight of their light side behind.
The general consensus of everyone was, oh, well, whoever's top seat has a huge advantage because they get to choose their light side first. And then I'm sort of counter arguing with people's like, yeah, that's true. And the first round does mean a lot because, like, once you get past the first round, you have to win less games overall, but they still have to play their dark side the second round, unless they also play against someone who is light side and won. Then it's like a flip and there it's like, it's a very, a bunch of things have to go exactly right in order for someone to never play their dark side in the bracket. And instantly when we started, that didn't happen. So like somebody even chose to play with their dark side first. So that messed everything up in a good way. I mean, it wasn't just like everyone's playing light side and top seats are always winning. It was very diverse, but it was just something to think about where it was a point of stress. Cause you lose your first game, you have to win like seven more rather than if you win your first game, you only have to win three more or four more.
Hmm.
So yeah, we talked about it a lot and there was a lot of people sort of grumbling about it, afraid it was going to be worse than it. I think it actually turned out.
So you think it actually wasn't as big of a issue. It actually, everybody had this nightmare of what it was going to look like. And at the end of the day, it played out.
Sure.
It's intended to play out.
Yeah. I think it really did play out the way it's intended to play out. So there's a really, if I can jump into what actually happened.
Yeah. Tell us all about it.
So a really important thing happened that changes the dynamic for everybody. We sit down and we start top 16 and I'm 15th at this point. So I'm seated against the second seat and he doesn't show up. We like start the whole round and he's not there. What was his name? Colby. And Eric, the judge, had to come over and be like, okay, yeah, he's not here. So it's like, we started the round. It's 5 minutes after you get the win. I guess what he showed up like 5 or 10 minutes later and he was playing in a legendary tournament, some kind of tournament that had a cash prize. They were doing very well. So he's like, look, no, I get it. I'm just sorry. I'm gone. So what that did is it means that I played no decks but get a win. Sure. So I count as playing neither light side nor dark side for it. So I have to play whatever my opponent played last time.
Uh-huh.
They'll switch. And the guys who are playing, I'm because it's a bracket, they're sitting right next to me. Like I could see.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I want the dark side player to lose so that the light side player can't play his light side deck against me. I get to play my light side deck. And that's what happened. The next round, the interesting thing is that the Colby, the second seat, still had to be paired against somebody else in the loser's bracket.
Sure.
And so that person got a bye down there. So that altered the whole field because now what decks people have to play is a little bit different than what they would have before. Because it's not like a clear, you played dark side, he played light side. So, and how it works at the tournament, Eric, the TO, would come over and write down what decks you're playing.
Sure.
And keep track of, you played light side this many times, you played dark side this many times. And then he would tell you who gets to pick what deck they play or what deck you are playing. Like, it's an automatic generation unless you're tied.
Okay.
So that was, there was no chance for like cheating or anything like that. You know, I know Tiny had texted me and it's like, oh, it seems like that could be abuse. It's like, no, not really, because the TO decides.
Because the TO had to sit there and watch it happen.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so we go to our next round and I'm playing light side and it basically, long story short, it became a Han versus a Palpatine with a huge edge battle. And it ended up being six points on edge for me versus 7 points on edge for him because he played another Palpatine out of his hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then Palpatine focused me down a whole bunch and that was the beginning of the end. If I had hit, Han would have targeted, striked, and killed Palpatine and blown up an objective and then my other guy would have swung and blown up another objective. Like, it would have been great. And that was really disheartening because I knew if my light side didn't win, my dark side's probably not going to win, so I'm pretty much done. So I lose, and I go to the loser's bracket. We pair for next round, and it was just like every other game. I didn't hit Mara or Vader on turn one. I think I got Vader turn two, but he already had too good of a start at that point. I was playing against Matt Coles, and he's a great player. He doesn't really make mistakes. So, I got swept in top 16. Really, like I ended up taking 12th. Like officially, I guess, not that they were really like, hey, these are what it was, but that's the round that I was at. But I didn't really earn my first win, so I really took like 15th. It feels good to say I took 12th.
Sure. It looked good when you posted it on Facebook.
Yeah, it feels good. But for top 16, the guys were really worried about having to switch sides. And I think what doesn't feel good is that in this system, when you sit down, and you don't get to play both sides of your deck, it's not a true representation of the meta and your skill. Like, there's no answer to the call. It's like, okay, I sit down, I play Matt, and he beats me with his light side, and then I play John with my dark side. But maybe my dark side versus Matt is really good, but my light side versus John is really bad. It's just like, it's weird because it's so asymmetrical.
Sure. But it's an asymmetrical game.
Yeah, it's true.
So do you think it's just... something that people are going to take time. Neil, you can answer this too. Is this going to just take time for people to get used to? Is there going to be an uproar where people are like, this doesn't feel like Star Wars anymore because we're not playing two sides? But I mean, at some point, you played both sides in Netrunner and they switched to this setup. And now everybody in Netrunner seems pretty content with it. So is it just a matter of it's going to take a couple events? You know, this only was released, you know, 2 weeks before the event came up. You know, so people didn't really have time to mentally adjust for it. Like, to say that you don't get a chance to play against the meta, you know, it's only because previously you used to be able to play the same person twice. And that you always, you know, there's some degree of being able to be like, yeah, I beat this guy even though he beat me.
Right.
And now there's not.
And that makes the tiebreaker problem.
Two good decks.
The thing with the tiebreaker thing, though, is that if, like, let's say if all things being equal, that our light sides are both really excellent and we're playing the exact same cards across the board, mm-hmm. like, the person who played the better game got to advance, right? Between both matches. Like, the person who got the tiebreaker, hypothetically, you know, they played a game that dealt more damage or what they were faster or whatever, and that's how they got to advance. And it just felt like you got to express your skill level a little bit more rather than the way it is now. But I get why it is now. Ultimately, if you win matches, you win the tournament. Like, so it doesn't really matter. I mean, a lot of people would say that. They'd be like, dude, don't count the points. Like, don't worry about it. Just win. If you win, it doesn't matter, right?
Sure. Yeah.
So I have mixed feelings about the top 16 on that. Sure. Neil, how do you feel about it?
I have mixed feelings also. I think that it's mostly just a new system that will take time to adjust to. We're so used to playing both sides and figuring out a tiebreaker that it's just a different, brave new world. But it's something that, to me, a lot of times feels emotionally weird, this new tournament system, because it feels very, very stark, you know? You win or you lose, you know, coming close really doesn't count, which maybe is a good thing, but emotionally it feels much more severe to me. But, I mean, intellectually, looking at it and thinking about it, seems like it works better.
I think that might be, we can save that. Maybe we should pocket this and have an entire, again, hour and 40 minute discussion about how much is luck in Star Wars and how much is skill, and can you mitigate one with the other?
I agree with you, Neil, that it feels good to be able to mitigate that loss and do something about it. But on the flip side, it's very cut and dry now. It's like win or lose. You know, you die in the Game of Thrones, whatever, wrong game.
Right, I know. I mean, if this is Game of Thrones, everybody would feel it would be very appropriate.
So that was Gen Con. That was Nationals. And it was really stressful, but also really fun.
Sure.
Yeah, a lot of fun, a lot of stress.
All right, so let's talk really quickly about the winning deck. We've already mentioned it a little bit. I have it here in front of me. So this is John. So he has a Darkseid deck with the Scum affiliation, which has 2 Vader, 2 Palpatine, 1 Saris, 1 Cancel, 2 Jawa, and 2 the Slave Trader, so the one that has the Zygerian slaver in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then his light side, this is a shock to no one, potentially, 2 Gamor, 2 Luke, 2 of the new Jedi Leia, 2 new Yoda, and 2 3PO.
Yep. Yeah.
So that is the deck that you saw the most of, right, Tyler?
I would say that build was what I saw more than anything else. And what the reason it was so good, I mean, I've already explained a bunch about it, but against Sith control, you get the Gamor shuttle thing out. I can't remember what it's called.
Hyperspace Marauder.
Yeah, there you go. And you use C-3PO to cancel an event, then win the edge and put C-3PO back out.
Right.
Like, that was just, even, you know, before I could be like, all right, I'm going to play an event, you're going to sack C-3PO, and then at least I can play another event and still, you know, Force Lightning Yoda. Nope, not anymore. So that was like one of many. There's just so many tricks. Like, there's so many ways to get around it with Target Strike and all that. And his Dark Side was really good because it had, you know, 4, I think at least 4, maybe 6. I can't remember. I think there's 6 1 cost units or 0 cost units with white tactics on it. Mm-hmm. So just like with the light side, could play lots of tactics. He was playing lots of cheap tactics out there as well to sort of flood the board and make sure he could control what he wanted to. And he played it well too. I mean, he knew, obviously he knew what he was doing, you know, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wasn't expecting the slave trade to be as good, widespread, and effective as I guess it turned out to be, with Lightside, you know, controlling the Force so much.
His ability to always have 4 to 5 cards in his hand because of that was clutch against me, at least. I mean, he didn't have it a lot, but I saw him sort of against other people. Just the trick of being like, oh, we're about to start an edge battle. Here, have this one edge icon card, and I'm going to draw 2 cards that's going to give me like 5 edge, you know, or whatever.
But I'm guessing he depended more on the Tatooine crash to generate those captured cards than it seems like you would be losing a lot of cards back from the slave trade.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that's exactly what he did against me, at least, you know. To make sure to be drawing those cards every turn, didn't hold back. It was good. I mean, he got what he needed. It's clearly, you know, one thing I do want to say, the difference between this region or this nationals and last nationals, when we had the sleuths, is that I felt the sleuths were like a dirty trick that like you couldn't get around unless you drew the right things. Or you couldn't get around unless you built your deck to have lots of 2-cost units in it. Because it, like, snuck in there, you know, it ran the blockade, obviously. I mean, that was the point of the deck, but it felt like, like, there's, you know, unless I draw the few answers to this, there's nothing I could do. Now, I know earlier in this discussion, I've said, unless I drew what I needed from Darkside, I couldn't do anything. But at least it wasn't like, I could block Yoda, you know, like, I could do something. I could attack him, but they all have 3 health, so the Lightside deck's full of 3 health characters. So made it really hard to force choke them or whatever. Anyways, just I liked it more, I guess, than the sleuths.
Sure. And then this is the last question for the day, and we will wrap up this episode.
Ba-da-bum, ba-da-bum.
Yeah, I know. What did the two of you think of? And maybe I'm wrong, but to me, this always felt like this is what has made the light side much stronger in recent months. What do you guys think of the Gamor run now after Gen Con?
It's the best pod in the game.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So good that it's game breaking. Like, we will never, ever see other objectives used now. Like, it's always going to be, okay, so I start off with Gamor run and let's see what else I can build. Or
I am personally under that impression now. I probably won't build a competitive Lightside deck that doesn't have Gamor run in it. Until there's a reason not to.
Sure.
Yeah, it'll always, I think, be a top consideration. Maybe if you have some really specific strategy, like once the Rogue Squadron set comes out and you need
you might have
specific
to answer that.
Vehicle builds. But until that point, I think that it's so good because it goes in everything. It goes in mono smugglers. It goes with Jedi. It went in my speeder deck and worked really well. It's just such a good set with itself. It's not even like Dash Freeholders where it was the combination between those two and then restricting them kind of reopens the light side meta and deck building because it just works with any deck.
Yeah, and the so many cards in it are incredible. Like a 1-cost... 3 health unit with one of each of the icons. Like, I don't care what color they are. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, to just be able to drop like, oh, all right, I can deal with 1 Yoda, but I can't deal with 1 Yoda and 2 free hired hands. Like, sure. And like the objective is amazing. Takes the force turn 1. You can pull things out of your graveyard with a 2nd card. You have like hired hands with white tactics and lots of health so they can't be choked.
It has got a resource.
It has the best resource, you know, and the best resource type of resource in the game. So Jedi desperately need more resources, and that, like, it has all those things. Any pod that doesn't have resources in it, like, just looks like a pity party compared to Gamor run now. Because now it gives you resources, controls the board, and holds the Force. It's
so incredible. Do you think we'll see something from FFG?
No.
Here's the thing, right? Like, Dash and Freeholders... people immediately started complaining about it, right?
Well, because...
Everybody complained. And then FFG's like, well, we have to do something about this. Let's limit it. Did everybody come away being like, Gamor run is broken? And everybody was like, cool, that was fun. I like playing with Gamor run because it gave me such a huge advantage and, you know, gave my opponent the same advantage. And, you know, I mean, I feel like if the goal of the last set of restrictions was to expand the deck space that people played in. And now we have Gamor Run, where it has to go in every deck, and you know, majority of the top 16 were running the same Jedi Gamor Run decks. You know, does FFG have to respond in a similar manner?
I think they only respond if the community as a whole is like, we all agree we should do something about this, which they won't, I don't think. I think most people would end the game and they would go, yeah, it's almost broken, but it's not broken. The thing with Dash and Freeholders is people could win turn one. They could, holding all the cards three times, drop three Freeholders and a Han. Like, that's, like, it doesn't matter how good you are at the game, there you can't win against that. That is a broken thing that's just like, oh, look, I got the cards. Here, I win. Like, that's how it works. And Gamma Run doesn't do, it's not that good. It's not broken in a guard. It's just really, really good, but not broken. You know?
And Gamor is kind of like what you were saying before about the sleuths. Gamor is at least interactive. Like, you still can block them. You can still deadly sight their stuff. You can still do something about it, as opposed to Dash and Freeholders was no more NPE because it didn't really interact a lot of times. You would just be like, oh, I need to get you to having eight cards. Well, here we go. I have these cards and you can do almost nothing about it.
Yeah.
And furthermore, I don't think FFG will do anything because, like I said, it goes with anything. So there's not an easy, clean, non-intrusive way to kind of come in and change the power level on it.
What if they just made it limit one per deck?
I was just going to say that I could see them doing that after a few more tournaments. They could say, come out with an article that says, hey, just after like a long talk with everybody, we've deduced that this pod is so good and everyone's playing with it. It kind of takes the fun out of it. So we're going to make it limit one. But they talked about doing that with Vader and Palpatine or with Luke, you know, a long time ago, and it never really went anywhere, or so I hear, you know, we would need more of the community to say that they want that to happen. That's my opinion, at least. I don't have any like official word or anything like that.
Well, there you go, community.
Yeah.
What do you think of the Gamor Run?
Leave your comments below.
Do people need to be addressing this? What are your thoughts? It's going to be up to us to decide if this is a problem or not. So get on the boards. How do you feel about Gamor Run? Is it changing the game for the better? Do you feel like it's just as broken as other combos that are out there, or should we just keep playing? That's going to be it for our Gen Con wrap-up. Thank you, Tyler. Thank you, Neil, for joining Smokey's Den today.
Hey, thanks for having me again. It's fun coming on.
I think, Neil, we've easily got several more episodes we can tackle in the near future.
Yeah, I hope so. It was really fun being at Gen Con and meeting a lot of people who had nice things to say about this podcast. So thank you for everyone who
thanks for listening, guys.
Listens and comments and is a fan.
I do want to say just one last thing about Gen Con as a whole. It was super fun. Everyone was super nice and great. And the different groups, like Flip and his community of people, were awesome. And I saw Team Covenant out there doing lots of interviews and stuff, and they were great. Everyone was just, the community was really supportive and fun to be around, and happy for everybody else who like done well, and you know, sorry and nice and handshakes for people who did not. And everyone had fun, and I love that, and I support that, and love your fellow players, everybody. It's great. That's all. Thanks.
Seconded. Yeah, it was really great to meet everyone and just have a good time.
And there you have it. So that's episode 10 in the bag, everybody.
Woo!
May the force be with you.